4. The next morning, as soon as she awoke, Rita said, "I saw you go off with that woman last night, that Carol Teague. Why?"
Nicholas, grubby and confused, not yet shaved, without having had the chance to splash cold water on his face or brush his teeth, murmured, "It had to do with signing the death certificate forms of Sousa. Strictly business."
He padded off to the bathroom, which he and Rita shared with the cubby to their right, and found the door locked.
"Okay, Stu," he said. "Finish shaving and unlock the door."
The door opened. There was his younger brother, sure enough, at the mirror, shaving away for all he was worth, guiltily.
"Don't mind me," Stu said. "Go ahead and..."
His brother's wife, Edie, said shrilly from their cubby,
"We got into the bathroom first this morning, Nick. Your wife had it for a whole hour last night showering, so would you please wait?"
Giving up, he shut the bathroom door, padded to their kitchen, which they did not share with anyone either to right or left, and started the coffee heating on the stove. Last night's to be reheated. He did not have the energy to brew a fresh pot, and anyhow their allocation of synthetic beans was low. They would be entirely out before month's end anyhow, would be begging, borrowing, or bartering with fellow tankers, offering their supply of sugar. Neither he nor Rita used much sugar, in exchange for the odd little brown ersatz beans. And of coffee beans, he thought, I could use an endless amount, if there was such a thing. But, like everything else, the, as marked on invoices, sin cough bins were severely rationed, and after all these years he accepted it, intellectually. But his body craved more. He could still remember how real coffee in the pre-tank days had tasted. 19, he remembered. I was in my first year of college, just started drinking coffee instead of malted milks, kid stuff. I had just begun to put on maturity. And then this. But, as Talbot Yancey, beaming or frowning, whatever was appropriate, would say,
"At least we weren't incinerated, as we had anticipated. Because we did have that whole year to get under, and we must never forget."
So Nicholas was not forgetting. As he stood reheating last night's synthetic coffee, he thought of himself incinerated 15 years ago, or the cholinesterase of his body destroyed by the hideous U.S. nerve gas weapon, the worst so far conjured up by insane idiots in high places in what had been Washington, D.C., themselves blessed with the antidote, atropine, and hence safe. Safe from the nerve gas made at the Newport Chemical Plant in western Indiana, as contracted for by the still-notorious FMC Corporation, but not safe from the missiles of the USSR. And he appreciated this, and was glad. Appreciated the fact that he was here and alive to drink this sin cough brew, bitter as it was. The bathroom door opened, and Stu said,
"I'm finished."
Nicholas started for the bathroom, and then there was a knock at the cubby's hall door. Going to it, bowing to the necessity created by his elected office, Nicholas opened the hall door and found himself facing what he recognized at once to be a committee. Jorgensen, Holler, Flanders, again at his door. The activists of the tank, and behind them, Peterson, and Grandi, and Martino, and Giller, and Christensen, their supporters. He sighed and let them in. Soundlessly, they knew enough to be that, the committee entered his cubby, filled it up. As soon as the hall door was shut, Jorgensen said,
"Here's how we're going to work it, President. We stayed up to 4 this morning thrashing it out."
His voice was low, hard, determined. "Thrashed out what?" Nicholas said, but he knew.
"We'll handle that Polcom. At noons. We'll stage a fracas on floor 20. Access to 20 is hard because of the way those crates of Leady components are piled. It'll take him half an hour to break up the fight, and that'll give you time, the time you need."
"Coffee?" Nicholas said, returning to the kitchen.
"Today,"
Jorgensen said. Not answering, Nicholas drank his coffee, and wished he were in the bathroom, locked in where his wife, his brother's wife and this committee, none of them could get to him. Even Carol, he thought.
He wished he could, at least for a minute, lock them all out and just sit in the loneliness and silence of the bathroom. Just be. And then, if he could just be, maybe he could think. Find himself. Not Nicholas St. James, the president of Aunt Tank the Tom Mix, but himself the man. And then he would know, really know, if Commissioner Nunes were right and the law was the law. Or if Carol Teague were right, and there was something strange or wrong, whatever she had happened onto with her reservoir of odd tapes of Yancey's speeches over the last year. Coup de grace, he thought. That's this. Right here, for me. The dispatching conch over the head. He turned to confront the committee of activists, his coffee cup in hand. Today, he said, mocking Jorgensen, whom he didn't particularly care for. Jorgensen was a red-necked, heavy-set type, the beer and pretzel sort.
We know it has to be done in a hurry, Holler spoke up, his voice low.
He was conscious of Rita, who stood at the mirror fixing her hair, and it made him nervous. In fact, the whole committee was nervous. Afraid, of course, of the cop, the Polcom. And yet, they had come here anyhow.
Let me tell you the situation as regards Artiforgs, Nicholas began, but at once Flanders broke in.
We know all there is to know. All we want to know. Listen, President, we know the plot they've hatched up.
The six or seven members of the committee glared at him with nervous anger and frustration. The small cubby, or rather standard-sized, in which Nicholas lived and now stood, writhed with their discomfort.
Who?
He asked.
Jorgensen said, the big shots at Estes Park, who run everything, tell their Mickey Mouse-sized little thugs like Nunes who to put the finger on.
What's the plot?
The plot,
Flanders said, almost stammering in his tick-like tenseness.
Is they're short on food, and they want a pretext to abolish an ant tank here and there. We don't know how many they want to shut down and force the tankers up to the surface to die. Many tanks maybe are just a few. It depends on how much trouble they're having with rations.
So see, Holler said beseechingly to Nicholas, his voice rising. The man next to him punched him, and he instantly dropped his voice to a whisper.
They need a pretext. They get it as soon as we fail to supply our monthly quota of Lettys. And last night, after the TV films of Detroit getting it, when Yancey announced that quotas would be upped, that's how we figured it out. They're going to up the quotas, and all the tanks that can't meet the new quotas will be abolished. Like us. And up there,
he gestured ceilingward,
we'll die.
Rita, at the mirror, said harshly,
like you want Nicholas to die when he goes up after that Artiforg.
Spinning, Holler said,
Mrs. St. James, he's our president. We elected him. That's why we elected him, so he, you know, help us.
Nick is not your father, Rita said, not a magician, not a wheel in the Estes Park government. He can't manufacture an artificial pancreas. He can't...
Here's the money,
Jorgensen said, and handed Nicholas a fat white envelope.
All West Dem 50 notes. 40 in all. 20,000 West Dem dollars. Late last night, while Nunes was snoozing, we went all over the tank collecting.
This sum represented the wages of half the tank for, he could not compute under the stress of the moment, but for a long, long time. The committee had worked very hard. Rita said to the committee, her voice harsh,
then you do it. You collected the money. Draw lots. Don't stick my husband with this.
Her voice became gentle.
Nunes is less apt to notice one of you missing than Nick. It might even be several days before he checks up. But once Nick goes, Nunes will know and...
And what, Mrs. St. James?
Holler said, determinedly but politely.
There's nothing Nunes can do once President St. James is out of here up the chute and onto the surface.
Rita said, when he returns, Jack, then Nunes will execute him.
To himself, Nicholas thought, and the hell of it is, I probably won't even get back.
Jorgensen, with clear, sincere reluctance, reached into the jacket of his work overalls, brought out a small object, flat like a cigarette case.
Mr. President,
he said huskily in a formal, dignified tone, that of an official bearer of tidings.
Do you know what this is?
Sure, Nicholas thought. It's a shop-made bomb, and if I don't go, and go today, you'll wire it somewhere here in my cubby or my office, set it time-wise or booby-trap it wire-wise, and it'll go off and blow me to bits and also probably my wife and perhaps even my kid brother and his wife or whoever is in my office with me at the time, if it's in my office. And you men, enough of you, anyhow, are electricians, professional wirers and component assemblers, as we all are to a certain extent. You'll know how to do it, so it'll have a 100% chance of success. Therefore, he realized, if I don't go to the surface, your committee absolutely and for sure will destroy me, plus perhaps innocent others around me. And if I do go, Nunes will be tipped off by some stooge among the 1,500 citizens of the tank, and he'll shoot me when I'm approximately halfway up the chute on my illegal, and this is wartime and military law obtains, journey to the surface. Flanders said,
President, listen. I know you think you're going to have to try to make it up the chute with those leadys always or nearly always hanging around up there with a damaged leady to drop down, but listen.
A tunnel, Nicholas said.
Yes. We boarded this morning early, as soon as the Autofac power supply came on to drown out the noise of the scoop and the other junk we had to use. It's absolutely vertical. A masterpiece.
Jorgensen said,
It takes off from the roof of room BAA on floor one, a storeroom for reduction gears for Type 2 leadys. A chain goes up it and is staked, securely, I guarantee, I swear, at the surface, hidden among some
lies, Nicholas said.
Blinking, Jorgensen said, No, honest.
You couldn't bore a vertical tube to the surface in 2 hours, Nicholas said. What's the truth? After a long, disheartened pause, Flanders mumbled,
We got the tunnel started. We got up about 40 feet. The portable scoop is secured there. We figure we'd get you in the tunnel with oxygen equipment and then seal it off at the bottom to deaden the vibrations and noise.
And, Nicholas said, I'd lodge myself there in the tunnel and scoop away until I emerged. How long had you calculated it'd take me, working alone and with only that small portable scoop, none of the big gear?
After an interval, someone among the committee murmured, 2 days. And we've got food and water already, in fact, one of those self-contained spaceman suits they used to use when there were flights to Mars. Compensation for moisture, waste material, everything. It still beats trying to make it up the chute with those leadys up there.
And Nunes, Nicholas said, at the bottom.
Nunes will be breaking up the fight on floor...
Okay, Nicholas said. I'll do it. They gaped at him. Rita, half to herself, let out a sob, a cry of despair. To her, Nicholas said, It beats being blown to bits. They mean it. He indicated the small, flat packet which Jorgensen held. Ipse dixit. He said to himself. I know that much foreign language. An assertion made but not proved. And in this case, I don't want to see it proved. Even our Polcom, Commissioner Nunes, would be appalled by what that device can do when triggered off. He went into the bathroom then and shut and locked the door after him. For this moment, brief as it was, of quiet, of being a mere biochemical organism, not President St. James of the Tom Mix World War III antiseptic subsurface communal living tank established in June of 2010 A.D. Long A.D., he thought. A hell of a long time after Christ. What I ought to do, he decided, is come back, not with the Artiforg, but with the bag plague for you all, every single last one of you. His bitterness surprised him, but of course it was superficial, because, and he realized it as he began running hot water by which to shave, the actuality is that I'm a frightened man. I don't want to lodge myself for 48 hours in that vertical tunnel, waiting to hear Nunes cut through below me, or a team of Broz's Leady police pick up the sound of my scoop from above, and then, if not that, emerge into the radioactivity, the rubble, the war.
into the pox of death from which we've fled, hidden ourselves. I don't want to emerge on the surface, even for a necessary cause. He despised himself for his attitude. It was hard, as he began to lather his jowls, to look at himself in the mirror. In fact, it was impossible. So he opened the bathroom door on Stu and Edie's side and called,
"Hey, can I borrow your electric razor?"
"Sure," his kid brother said and produced it.
"What's the matter, Nick?"
Edie said with unusual, for her, compassion. "Good Lord, you look just awful." "I am awful," Nicholas said, and seated himself on the rumpled, unmade bed to shave. "It takes force," he said, "to make me do the right thing." He didn't feel like talking about it. He shaved in introverted silence.